always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
These trials are foolishness, Stuart. They still haven't even identified a crime in New York. You have the documents case, which is now fully blowing up because Jack Smith is overzealous and doesn't understand how to protect the rights of the defendant or even how to handle evidence. The January 6th case, oh please, that's so ridiculous, was always ridiculous even from the start. And then you got Fannie Willis down in Georgia, and she might get kicked off of that case. What people are seeing is a recklessness from the radical Democrat Party just trying to convict Donald Trump no matter what the law says.
506, and welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. My partner Tim Jones is off today. This is day, I think, 14 or 12 or 13 of the Donald Trump trial. A lot going on there. We've got on the line with us a new guest and a good friend of mine. She is Jennifer Bukowski. She is executive director of Show Me Defenders, a not-for-profit handling murder cases on behalf of the Missouri Public State Defender System pro bono. She is also the president of the Federal Society of Jefferson City's Lawyers Chapter. She serves on the board of directors of the Show Me Institute and on the Missouri Supreme Court Task Force on Criminal Justice. And somewhere between all of that, she also guest hosts occasionally on 93.9 The Eagle there in Columbia. Jennifer, welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show.
Great to be here, Chris.
Excellent. Jennifer, one thing that I want you to clear up for me, and I've heard this over and over and over, and Representative Byron Donalds, he said the same thing, that there has not been a crime identified in this hush money case. I thought the crime was the made up crime, the misdemeanors of putting in a false bookkeeping entry and trying to disguise a campaign contribution. I thought that was the crime. Why do we keep hearing a crime hasn't been identified?
Because it hasn't, Chris. He's charged with 37 counts of making a false business record entry, mm-hmm. but you have to make that entry with the intent to defraud and the intent to commit another crime and to conceal the commission thereof. Well, what crime was he intending allegedly to conceal or commit by falsifying these business records? They've refused to say. They did a motion for a bill in particular to try to get them to narrow it down to like four things, but it's just outrageous that the former president of the United States is sitting there in court and his team does not know specifically what crime that he supposedly is covering up in order to prepare the defense of the former president. And today they had custodial witnesses that were just sitting there saying, yes, I'm from the phone company. This was a phone call that was at this and that time. They had tied up Donald Trump all day in court to sit through that monotony. It's really unbelievable.
We saw the so-called blockbuster testimony of Stormy Daniels over a day and a half. You know, a lot of people had to be reminded, Jennifer, that this is not a case on whether Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels had sex. It was about this alleged discrepancy in this bookkeeping entry.
And it's not a crime to pay someone money to not tell their story or their allegations of having an affair with you. So that in and of itself is not a crime, but that's pretty much all Stormy Daniels is there to testify about.
What do you think about the judge allowing Stormy Daniels to go off track and to bring things into the trial that shouldn't have? And of course, the jurors are supposed to act like they didn't hear that. As a brilliant attorney yourself, what do you think of the judge doing that? And is that a grounds for appeal?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I mean, allowing prejudicial and irrelevant information that doesn't go to the heart of this case about these business records entries and whether he had any kind of intent to conceal a crime, instead allowing salacious details of an alleged 2006 sexual liaison with this porn star, that can taint the jury, that can be unfair to the defendant, Donald Trump, and that could be a crime the refusal to grant the mistrial as requested by defense counsel could be a ground to reverse this on appeal.
Jennifer, you know, I said last week is that I think earlier this week that I think President Trump must carry around a horseshoe, a four-leaf clover, a rabbit's foot, and any other thing that you would deem lucky. What's happened with these trials that have just fallen apart has been absolutely amazing. Tell us about the Florida trial that has been postponed indefinitely. What are the issues that are involved there that has made this a case that that can't be tried anytime soon?
Well, the judge down there, she's actually a Trump appointee, and that one has been, because of the complications of all the different pretrial motions, she said, look, we cannot get through all these different things fairly by the May 20th court date. So it's been delayed indefinitely because they have so many pretrial proceedings to get through, including, like, we've seen a lot of documents get unredacted, and that's been kind of eye-opening, some of the things that have come out from that have been previously redacted that we've been able to see, such as, like, the Secret Service cooperating with the feds during the Mar-a-Lago raid. And it's just been interesting to watch that all unfold and have more transparency into how things went down.
Speaking with Jennifer Bukowski, Executive Director of Show Me Defender. She's also President of the Federalist Society's Jefferson City Lawyers Chapter. I want to ask you about the Fannie Willis case. The judge, appellate court, this week ruled that Trump can appeal a decision that allowed her to stay on as the prosecutor. What do you think the chances that Trump's appeal can be successful? And do you know what grounds, are they still using these basic grounds that she had a conflict of interest to throw her off the appeal? And is that solid, do you think?
I think it's a good sign that they did allow the appeal to proceed, because it's very limited what you can do in interlocutory appeal. Interlocutory meaning before, you know, the trial's over, we allow you to go ahead and be heard by higher courts on certain issues. So I think it's a good sign that they're allowing that appeal to take place, and that will certainly delay the trial until after the election, most certainly. I mean, it's very likely that it will. And so they wouldn't do that if they didn't think the claims had some merit, that there's this conflict of interest. And indeed, if you look at the trial court's decision, where it kind of split the baby, he said some very, very strong, had very strong words about Fannie Willis's demeanor and her testimony in this case, and the concerns that he had about her and her paramour and their testimony to the court. So, I think that that's an indication that maybe they get a different special counsel if they do prevail on that appeal, which would push things off even further and maybe even result in the dismissal of the case.
Mm. All right. We covered Mar-a-Lago. We covered hush money. We carried Fannie. What am I missing? Are we missing a case? Which one?
Well, of the Trump cases, we have
there's four, right?
Yeah, there's four. There's the D.C. one.
Oh, right.
And then we had other topics like Vernon County and...
No. I was meaning on the Trump... I was meaning Trump trials. I was trying to get through all the Trump trials, and you brought up the January 6th. We're waiting on the Supreme Court to make a decision on Trump's immunity.
Okay, so whether or not, you know, presidents have to worry about being criminally prosecuted after the fact by their political rivals who then take power is the issue at the immunity argument that the Supreme Court is currently considering. The Supreme Court is also considering a case by another January 6th defendant that could affect many of the charges that Trump is charged with in the indictment, as well as to whether or not this, you know, count that was this statute that was created for Sarbanes-Oxley, the accounting stuff, whether that could be applied as they're trying to apply it, the Department of Justice is trying to apply it to the January 6th defendants and former President Donald Trump. So that one is also in limbo. There's so much going on. I can't even, not even imagine how much Trump is paying in legal bills right now. But he needs good defenders on all these fronts because they're coming at him to try to prevent us from being able to reelect Donald Trump for president, all in the name of saving democracy. It's just quite something.
All right. We've gone through the four Trump trials. Let's bring it back here to Missouri. Our radio colleague and attorney, Mark McCloskey, won an important case in Vernon County. The Vernon County Central Committee had sued to remove certain members off the ballot who did not take a written test or an exam to prove their Republican worthiness. Your thoughts on this, and will this appeal, and can it hold up to appeal?
Chris, this case, you know, has huge implications. Vernon County has a population of 19,707 people. It's on the west part of the state.
So that's a weekday Cardinal game attendance.
Right? And so it's a small county. Republicans decided to kick off eight local Republicans, many of whom hold office right now as like the county clerk and, you know, local county positions off of the ballot, because they wouldn't take this moral value survey. And, when they tried to submit their $100 filing fee to the treasurer of the county Republican Party, they didn't accept it. So McCloskey led a suit to say these people need to be removed from the ballot against the clerk of the county because they aren't endorsed or they didn't accept the money. And the judge ruled, yes, as a ministerial duty of the clerk, they need to look whether or not they accepted the money. And since they didn't, they're booted off the ballot. Well, Chris, this has big implications because if just the local Republican Party central committees can pre-screen who can be on ballots, then the voters don't get to decide amongst the primary candidates.
Is that the appeal?
The next level to the state GOP, all of a sudden you're going to have to like win a mini election before you can be on the ballot to begin with. But on the other hand, you have the First Amendment right of association of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. There was another case that's like kicking around right now where a guy from the Klan filed as a Republican, and the Republicans want him off the ballot because they don't want to associate with him. So it's kind of balancing the rights of the voters to be able to decide what candidate should proceed to the general election during a primary versus the Republican Party's First Amendment rights to association. And so it's a really interesting legal issue, and I don't know if they'll need litigation or legislation to sort this out in the future, because you and I were both at the state convention. It can be a different group of characters that are, you know, in different roles in these central committees in the counties throughout our state, and they don't necessarily reflect the views of the plebiscite at large, but they could all of a sudden be deciding whether or not someone can be on the ballot. That would be a humongous increase to their power, because right now they're not really that much of an entity. If they get to start deciding who gets to run, then they'll all of a sudden be incredibly powerful players.
Speaking with Jennifer Bukowski, Executive Director of Show Me Defender. She's also the president of the Federalist Society's Jefferson City Lawyers Chapter. Jennifer, speaking of last weekend's state convention in Springfield, it did not end like a lot of us wanted with unity and all of us getting ready to go to Wisconsin and as delegates to cheer on Donald Trump and hope that he defeats President Biden. Your overall view, you were a delegate, you witnessed what happened, your views on what happened.
Well, Chris, I mean, I was there. I felt somewhat blindsided because I was communicating with fellow delegates and, you know, asking them, you know, are you going to support our committee woman or whatever? And I was told yes. I didn't have anyone tell me that they had any kind of objection or complaint. And then out of nowhere, there was this big movement that voted out our national committee woman, our national committee man, that also, you know, changed the rules and got rid of the chair's slate. And so they're picking their 27 people to go to the RNC national convention. And I hope they don't, you know, I hope they behave themselves and don't embarrass Missouri in any way. I'm sure that they
Talk about how
who will be showing up in Milwaukee.
Talk about how the rules are changed, because I'm sure a lot of folks will wonder that, and there may be some controversy in it. How were the rules changed?
Well, there are a couple of different things. One thing was the rules were that the chair of the party, Nick Myers, gets to pick two people from each congressional district to go to the national convention, and he had picked those 16 people. And they changed the rules to say, nope, we get to decide here in this mob, you know, voting thing where you're standing up or sitting down, what all 27 of the delegates. And so they changed that rule. So, and then they put in their own slate of 27 delegates that didn't include the 16 that the chair had picked. So there could be a challenge to the credentialing of the delegates. I'm not sure if that will take place or not. But that was one rule change. Another rule change that they had was they had a rule that you had to have copies for all the delegates of any amendments to the platform. Mm-hmm. They wanted to change that so that you didn't have to have the copies. At that point, I was like, I will go run to the copy machine for this lady that only has 400 copies, like the amount of time we're spending on this. But so there was a fight about that. And then they ended up like doing a PQ and adjourning before we even adopted a platform at all. It was quite a mess. Mm-hmm. It was chaotic, and it wasn't like I expected it to go, but it was, you know, kind of messy. Sometimes democracy is messy. That's what happened on Saturday.
I was just about to say democracy is messy sometimes.
But there wasn't a lot of transparency, and so that's what concerns me with this Vernon County situation. If you have committee members that may or may not tell you whether they're for you or against you, and all of a sudden they're like, nope, you don't pass our morals test or whatever for reasons that we just get to decide arbitrarily, so you don't get to be on the ballot because we're not going to deposit your $100. I mean, are they really representing the interest of, you know, all the Republicans in their county? I mean, it's going to really change the power dynamics quite a bit and make it much more important to pay attention. Do you even know who your committee, you know, your county committee Republican members of your central committee are? Have you participated in selecting them? Have you voted for them? Because all of a sudden they could be deciding whether or not you get to vote for people in the future.
Before we close up here, Jennifer, I want you to talk about your organization, Show Me Defenders, which is a nonprofit organization that does some great work pro bono. Tell us about Show Me Defenders.
Show Me Defenders, it's a not-for-profit. I did innocence work, you know, where people have been wrongfully convicted, and realized that, you know, if people had adequate representation at the outset, poor people, you could make sure you prevent the wrongful convictions, because no one wins if you put the wrong person away for a murder. Mm-hmm. And murder is where the stakes are the highest. So this is just a new organization to help the public defender on bigger cases on murder cases to make sure that people get adequate representation and shine some sunshine into the situation. Not to let the guilty walk free, but if you protect the constitutional rights of the least powerful among us, you're protecting them for everyone.
That is Jennifer Bukowski. Her ex account says she's a libertarian Republican defense attorney, radio talker, centrally located there in Columbia, Missouri. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us. And please don't be a stranger. Let's do this again. Appreciate great talking to you and getting your insight and expertise.
Anytime, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jennifer. And up next, 524, Dr. Aaron Hudlin, chief economist at the Show Me Institute. Got a lot of economic news to speak with the good doctor about. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9, 94.1, News Talk STL. Yeah.